I'm Billy Shields. This is number 0147, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0147. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Christy Meller, who is the author of Fun Without Dick and Jane. She deals with empty nest syndrome.
I was at a college night with my oldest son, who's now just finished up his second year of college. And one of the mothers came up to me and said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when Seth leaves the house. And I said, well, I can think of a few things. I don't know. Do you want to talk? So it just got me thinking that a lot of parents who've been sort of very involved in their children's lives, shall we say, for the last 18 years, the exclusion of their own life, suddenly they're faced with, wow, no one's home, and now what do I do?
Carl Waggett is a fire chief and a dad. He's written a parenting book called Keeping Me Awake. As a parent, what keeps him awake?
It was stuff that I never worried about before. Going into a shopping mall with my kid or whatever, and all of a sudden I seem to be guarding it like it's my wallet, right? It was stuff like that that really kind of changed my mindset. And then when you take, the line of work that I'm in, it gives you a bit of a unique side of life, right? So it did. It definitely changed the way I look at things.
Shannon Rose is a professional wrestling announcer, public relations president, and he's also known as Mr. Hollywood for his entertainment work. He also suffers from a life-threatening genetic disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. What exactly is Ehlers-Danlos syndrome?
It's a group of connective tissue disorders. And you think of collagen. Collagen is the glue that makes up our body. Well, that glue doesn't work right. So these people, 1 in 15,000 people across the nation, across the world have it. So for instance, I'll give you a few examples. When I was a younger child, I had lost my voice for a year because it affects everything from your blood to being autoimmune to everything from your lungs, everything else. And when I lost my voice, I didn't let it stop me though. I went ahead and was still in the choir and did lip sync to songs before lip sync was cool. Also, I lost my use of my arms. Actually, I'm talking to you now. I can move my arms, not 100%, but I don't have no feeling in them of being paralyzed. I've had bowel obstruction. Everything in my body's been affected in some way.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0147, is Billy Shields, who is a reporter at Global News here in Montreal, the other place that I work. And I thank you very much, Billy, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. The Stuff File program, also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? With investment banks everywhere facing an uncertain future, one shareholder with a Japanese investment bank, the bank is called Nomura, has come up with a novel suggestion to help boost its share price. He wants to replace all office toilets with old-style or old-school Japanese-style squat facilities. And he's not kidding. Under Japanese law, shareholders who have held at least 30,000 shares for 6 months or more can make their own proposals at annual meetings. As our friend met the requirement, he made the quite serious suggestion on a company website that, quote, all toilets within the company's offices shall be Japanese-style toilets, thereby toughening the legs and loins and hunkering down on a daily basis, aiming at achieving four-digit stock prices. Yeah. He added the company can surely avoid failure if they straddle over a Japanese-style toilet every day and strengthen their lower body. If it cannot, it can only be accepted as a bad luck. The bank's share price dropped below 1,000 yen late in 2008. That's about $12.75. And has not reached the four-digit mark since then. The unnamed shareholder actually submitted 100 proposals to be voted on at the meeting, including changing the company's name to Vegetable Holdings, though only 18 met the bank's requirements for them to be submitted to shareholders. The bank's board of directors opposed all 18 suggestions that this guy came up with. Other suggestions include abolishing the practice of giving three bonsai cheers at the annual meeting because too many shareholders have strong armpit odor. Wow. Let's just admit that other cultures are different, shall we, and move on. As a matter of fact, let's move on to Singapore. Singapore has tightened rules on window cleaning after 9 maids fell to their deaths just this year alone from high-rise apartments. The Manpower Ministry said in a statement that maids are no longer allowed to clean the outside of windows unless they are supervised. The ministry said 7 of this year's 9 maid deaths were due to dangerous window cleaning or hanging of laundry. Local media featured dramatic front-page photos of a 29-year-old Indonesian maid as she fell from her employer's 12-story apartment window last week, but was grabbed and rescued by neighbors one floor below. The 9 maids who fell to their deaths were from Indonesia, which supplies about half of Singapore's 200,000 maids. 9 maids in less than a year? Wow, that's an epidemic. And maybe also some sort of chronic inner ear problem. Anyway, in Bristol, Tennessee, 54-year-old Betty Jones said she was just praising the Lord, praising the Lord. But due to the incredibly high volume of her praising, she received a citation for violating the city's noise ordinance. Now, Jones told local reporters that her regular Sunday routine includes 5 hours of praising and dancing while she listens to music by Johnny Cash, Randy Travis, Alan Jackson, and the Judds. All good religious tunes. But neighbors called police complaining about the loud music. An officer helped her lower the volume on her stereo and then was going to leave it at that. But he had to come back 2 hours later after another complaint. This time, they gave Jones a citation, at which point she became enraged and began screaming and cursing at the officers. Guess all that praising didn't really take. So they arrested her, and she got to spend the night praising the Lord from jail. Well, the Lord does work in mysterious ways. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here on the Stuff File program, regular listeners to this show know that we do love our truck spills, and this is a special one. A 3-truck crash on Interstate 40 in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in May, destroyed 1 truck and sent 2 people to hospital with minor injuries. 1 tractor trailer was carrying a load of charcoal and charcoal lighter fluid, and it crashed into the rear of a tractor trailer carrying frozen meat. The lighter fluid facilitated a huge fireball slash barbecue. Ooh, I hope someone had the barbecue sauce. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. How do you enjoy life when the kids move on? Christy Meller is the author of Fun Without Dick and Jane, Your Guide to a Delightfully Empty Nest. And she joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Christy.
Hello, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So, empty nest, huh?
Yes.
Are you dealing well with it?
Well, I'm sort of half in and half out, but it, of course, got me to thinking about the whole subject when I was at a college night with my oldest son, who's now just finished up his second year of college, and one of the mothers came up to me and said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when Seth leaves the house. And I said, well, I can think of a few things. I don't know. Want to talk? So, you know, it just got me thinking that a lot of parents who've been sort of very involved in their children's lives, shall we say, for the last 18 years, to the exclusion of their own life, suddenly they're faced with, you know, wow, no one's home, and now what do I do?
So, have you built that craft room in their old bedroom yet?
Well, I'm actually. This is funny. We had some issues with our house that required some construction, and I ended up getting rid of my oldest child's bedroom. He's going to come home to find he has no bedroom. He's actually coming home in the summer. He has his old childhood bedroom that he shared with his brother when he was little, and he was fine with that. But I said, honey, it's going to be, there are a few changes. It's not just that your room's a craft room. There is no room. But You know, I wrote a book called The Three Martini Playdate quite a while ago. And that, at the time, it was sort of, you know, when I thought these parents were starting to go crazy with the over-parenting, and which now they're calling helicopter parenting, because I think it's gotten even worse. And I think this book is sort of a bookend to that. You know, I look at it as the people who didn't take my advice, or, you know, maybe they read my book and they thought it was so great, but they didn't actually follow it. And so they've spent the last, you know, 18 years being absolutely micromanaging their children's everything, and, you know, the schedules, and being really, really over-involved. And I think that's, you run into some difficulty if you actually haven't had a life, which I've always encouraged parents to have a life while you have children, but it's not too late to start.
Now, you keep using the term parents. Is it really parents, or is it mostly moms?
You know, I address both parents, because I do know plenty of dads who are just as involved and, you know, just as overprotective. And, you know, I think in some cases, in a lot of cases these days, there really is, you know, team parenting. I mean, it could be that the dads are off working and the moms are off working as well. But I think there's a lot of attention. Parents seem to center their children, their lives around their children, as opposed to having their kids kind of, you know, join our life already in progress. It's sort of like, oh, we have a child, now this child must become the center of the universe. And I do think it goes for dads, too. I mean, I've seen it anyway.
Now, are your parents still around?
No, they're not, sadly.
Because I was wondering what kind, at any point during the time that you were raising your children, if your parents were around, did either your parents or your husband's parents say, see, I told you?
Well, you know, in fact, my parents were a great inspiration for my first book, The Three Martini Playdate, because, you know, I grew up with that sort of benign neglect that I think a lot of us experienced. I was the youngest of three children, and I grew up in the city in San Francisco, and very, you know, and what I learned from them, how important it is to give your kids the tools to be independent people, because I think that's one of the things I address in this book and also in my other books. Is, you know, when you do everything for your child, you think you're helping them, but in fact, you're doing them such a disservice, because they need to have these tools so that they need to know how to fail on their own. They need to, you know, because otherwise you're going to send this kid off to college who has no idea how to navigate a city or talk to a grown-up or, you know, do anything for themselves. And I learned that from my parents, certainly. I, of course, times were a little different, but I think that kids are so overly supervised these days. You know, they don't know how to go out in the street with a stick and find a game to play, or, you know, organize their own sporting event, or organize their own games. It's all supervised and structured and put on a uniform and get driven to the ball field. Here's your trophy for showing up. And, you know, it's what happens. Kids are not allowed to be bored anymore. And I do remember, I don't know if you had that kind of childhood, but, you know, you're lying on the floor looking at the ceiling and counting the holes in the thing and just going, oh, God, I'm so bored. But, you know, that's how imagination starts flourishing.
Absolutely. Now, tell me, have your kids read your books, particularly your new one, Fun Without Dick and Jane?
Well, my oldest is going to be home next week from college, and he'll be here for most of the summer. And he said he's looking forward to reading it. So I said, yeah, well, you're in it a lot, so sure. I wrote a book called Raised by Wolves a couple of years ago, and that is sort of geared more towards his age group and up. And he enjoyed that one a lot. My kids feature prominently in all my books, I think.
One of the things you talk about is stepping back, once the kids are up and gone, stepping back into social circles. When did you find out you were actually leaving social circles?
Well, I think a lot of parents do it inadvertently, you know. They have friends who sort of fall by the wayside, especially if they have friends who don't have children, and or, you know, their kids are of different ages. And I think it's really sort of sad. You know, we have friends who have no kids, and I think it's important to have those kind of friends, not just socialize exclusively with other parents. But a lot of parents do. I think they just, you know, they get, the relationships are based on their kids' friends and their kids' friendships. And then their friends sort of fall by the wayside. And then suddenly you wake up one day and your kids are gone and you think, what do I have in common with these people other than our kids were friends? So, yes, if you haven't been maintaining and cultivating those relationships, I think it's a, you know, perfect time to maybe reacquaint yourself with some old friends or think about ways to make new ones or, you know, put yourself in situations where you can make new ones.
Well, I was just about to ask, what happens to those friends that you did have, the ones who were friends because they had kids your kids' age or were your kids' friends? What happens to those friends when your kids leave the nest?
Well, you know, I think that's when you really discover whether you have anything in common with them or not. And, you know, it could be that you lost some really good friends because you were just spending every second that you were with them talking about, you know, diapers and how cute it was when your kid did this. And they just went, okay, God, I've got to get out of this, you know. And sometimes you know, those valuable friendships went by the wayside. And I think, you know, yes, you will discover whether you have anything in common. Sometimes you have a great deal in common with these people, even if you did meet through a preschool thing or a birthing class or, you know, whatever. And it turns out you end up being fast friends forever. We have several friends like that. So, but it's, you're certainly going to discover it once the kids are out of the picture.
You say that you prepare yourself for the kids leaving. Your son is coming back for the summer, but what about the possibility that he might become a boomerang child?
Yes, this is certainly, you know, that's, people are talking about this a lot, and I know because of the economy, for instance, that's one reason why a lot of kids come back and they come home to stay. I think there are other things at play, because I do think that there are a lot of parents who, they welcome their children coming back. I am not saying that's a bad thing or wrong, but I think sometimes you have to look at where that might come from. I mean, do you want your child to come back because you are so, you know, you still have that sort of parent-child dynamic, and you're going to end up, you know, serving your kid snacks on the sofa while he watches TV and he's 24 years old? I mean, it's, you know, is he coming home to be your roommate? Is he coming home to, you know, is he going to be doing his own laundry and chipping in on the rent? Is it that you miss taking care of him? I mean, I think, you know, intergenerational living is, you know, happens all over the world, and it's not a terrible thing. But I think, you know, do you want to help launch your kid, or do you want to just sort of give them a helping hand while they get themselves on their feet, you know, for their next?
The book is called Fun Without Dick and Jane, and it's written by Christy Meller. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk to us about the book, although from what you're saying, you certainly have the time now.
Well, you know, I've managed to pack it in still. I always wonder where the time goes. But thanks so much for having me, and really thank you for letting me talk about the book.
Christy Meller, author of Fun Without Dick and Jane, Your Guide to a Delightfully Empty Nest. You can visit Christy's website at christymeller.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0147, and you'll find links to Christy's website, plus also links to amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Keeping Me Awake, plus Shannon Rhodes, Mr. Hollywood, is here. And we have an idiot of the day coming your way, and of course, lots more Stuff File news on the Stuff File program that you can hear, of course, on Stitcher Smart Radio. And if you haven't got Stitcher, you can find Stitcher in your app store. It just takes a few seconds to download. And during the registration, if you hit the promo code box and enter Stuff File, and Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, that's S-T-U-P-H-F-I-L-E, you will get automatically entered for a chance to win $100. And the latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites. And you'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Well over 5,000 shows are available for you with no syncing, on demand, and it's available at Stitcher Smart Radio, the smart way to listen to radio. Don't forget to enter the promo code STUFFFILE when you register. Well, in Port St. Lucie, Florida, 49-year-old Maureen Raymond was pulled over on suspected driving under the influence and didn't do so hot on the roadside sobriety test. But she says that's because the test they gave her wasn't fair. She says she told the deputy at the time that she couldn't walk a straight line with her big boobies. Those were exact words, with her big boobies, which she says makes balancing difficult. The deputy reported that Ms. Raymond also helpfully offered to show him the evidence, but that he stopped her before she had a chance to. That had to be a fun police report to fill out, don't you think? Meanwhile, 37-year-old Carmen Tisch made a name for herself in Denver after punching, scratching, and sliding her buttocks against a $30 million painting by abstract expressionist Clayford Still at the Clayford Still Museum last year. After causing an estimated $10,000 worth of damage to the painting, an intoxicated Tisch then pulled down her pants, slid her buttocks against the painting, and urinated on the museum floor. In the end, she pleaded guilty to felony criminal mischief for striking at and leaning against the oil-on-canvas painting 1957-J number 2, and has been sentenced to 2 years of probation. She'll also have to undergo mental health treatment and receive help for alcohol dependency on a condition of her sentence. Plus, she may still face a restitution hearing. Still was considered one of the most influential post-World War II American abstract expressionist artists, but he was not as famous as contemporaries such as Jackson Pollock. He died in 1980, and Denver officials worked for decades with his widow, Patricia, to secure a single artist museum featuring his works. When she died in 2005, she bequeathed her husband's collection to the city. Four of his works were auctioned for $114 million to endow the museum, which opened in late 2011. As for our good friend Carmen Tisch, well, everybody's an art critic. Well, it's all of the talk in Atlanta. Golfers at the very exclusive Piedmont Driving Club apparently behaved quite badly at a recent golf tournament. A letter has been sent to all members stating that club leadership is investigating. A few members have already been fined or suspended. Among the complaints of grievous behavior witnessed on the golf course include at least one golfer playing nude, urinating on the greens, trying to pick up a golf ball with bare fanny cheeks, aiming shots at other golfers, doing a drunken face plant onto a grill, which happily wasn't lit. What followed involved an unzipped fly and a stunning lack of modesty. Cursing so loudly that a diner at a nearby wedding rehearsal dinner asked the offenders to turn down the volume, and mooning those same dinner guests. The driving club, founded in 1887, is invitation only, and it's not cheap. Reportedly $90,000 just for the initiation fees. Apparently, money doesn't buy you manners. And finally, just one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Here's a bad side effect of obesity that we hadn't thought of. After your fat, artery-clogged body is a corpse, you may be too much for a crematorium to handle. Investigators in Graz, Austria, believe it was an obese corpse that caused a fire that nearly destroyed a crematorium. They believe large chunks of burning fat from a 440-pound woman's body blocked an air filter, which in turn caused the filter system to overheat. Firefighters were able to control the blaze by blasting water through the crematorium's vents, but not before the fire had already done enough damage to keep the crematorium shut down for several days. Former Graz fire chief says, "It's time for Austria to start building special crematoria that are equipped to handle the risks of cremating obese bodies." I'm guessing she chose cremation, otherwise she could have killed six pallbearers. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We often hear about books that talk about parenting from a mother's point of view. Well, it's time to talk about it from a dad's angle. Carl Waggett is the author of Keeping Me Awake. He's also the acting captain at his fire department in Cambridge, Ontario. And Carl joins us on the line right now from Cambridge. Hi, Carl.
Hey, how are you, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So,
first of all,
I want to know the title, Keeping Me Awake. What was the inspiration for that title?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. It took longer for me to come up with the title than it did to actually write the book. I couldn't come up with a good idea for a title, but when thinking about kids, the one thing that I thought, especially when I became a father in 2002, the number one thing that happened to me after I had kids was there was stuff I lost sleep about that I never lost sleep about before. So I really thought it kind of tied into one thing, and it tied into everything for the simple reason parenting is that one subject that seems to cover every single subject, right? So that's, I found it to be the perfect title because that's really what the book's about, is the stuff that does keep us awake.
So what were the things that kept you awake?
Well, you know, like I said, it was stuff that I never worried about before. You know, going into a shopping mall with my kid or whatever, and all of a sudden I seem to be guarding it like it's my wallet, right? So it was stuff like that really kind of changed my mindset. And then when you take the line of work that I'm in, it gives you a bit of a unique side of life, right? So it did. It definitely changed the way I look at things.
Well, initially, what made you decide that you needed to write this book? Did you feel there was not information out there or that your side of the story as a dad wasn't being told?
Well, really, you know what? It didn't really have a lot to do with that. I always had that nagging voice in the back of my head that I always wanted to write a book, right? And I just never found a subject that I was, you know, cared enough about, to be honest with you, that I would actually document it. And like I said, when you have kids, especially from a guy standpoint, I mean, feelings was kind of a new thing for me till I had kids, right? And then all of a sudden when I had them, I found a subject that there were so many different views on it and so many different opinions on what you should be doing and how you should be going about it. And like I said, you know, the stuff that you see at work really kind of ramps it up one level. And then, for lack of a better term, I just sat down one night and I started writing about it, you know, for some strange reason. And that's really where the book came from.
Is your dad still around?
Oh, yeah. He came over from England in 71. He's a millwright by trade. And, you know, he was one of those perfect dads that, you know, like, not real touchy-feely, I'll be entirely honest with you, but he really kind of took the time to say, hey, look, Carl, this is the stuff that you need in life. And I think that's where it all kind of started from. You know, there would be the odd time that he'd sit me down and say, look, this is something that you really want to know about, whether it be, you know, self-respect or anything like that, or education and where you're going to find your life. He was a real big picture kind of guy. So that kind of rubbed off on me when I had my kids.
So what does your dad think of this book?
Well, you know, it's funny because he saw a lot of the lessons that he taught me in it. So he kind of had a good giggle at the fact that, you know, he told me this stuff and I was still thinking about it 30-some-odd years later. He always talked to me like I was an adult, never like I was a kid, you know, never kind of patronized me, kind of talked to me about the world and the way it goes around. So when he read a lot of the lessons in this book, for lack of a better term, like I said, he got a bit of a giggle out of it for sure.
Also, I'm sure, because you never really know when you're giving these lessons, if they're really sinking in. Now your dad has it on the written page that apparently they did sink in.
Well, you know, that's funny, because like I said, I just got my stripes actually the other day for an acting captain. And you know, he sat down, he said to me, he goes, you know, that's a funny thing about parenting, right? You get these timbits of information. You never really know if it's right or not till about 10, 15, 20 years after. And, you know, that sense of pride that I saw in his eyes, I mean, that was definitely, that was worth the effort that I put into it. So hopefully, and you know, like I said, I've got my little girl and little boy now. I implement the same things, right? And hey, so far so good, right? But hey, you never know with parenting. It can turn on a dime.
Now, some of the things you talk about in the book, for instance, you are your kid's hero, so be it, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's such a huge thing. And I'll be honest with you, where I get that experience from is it's on the job. And you know what? I don't want to play that whole firefighter card of, oh, I see terrible things. But, you know, you see things after a while, and it really starts to sink in as far as the priorities are concerned. I mean, I don't think people – that's the biggest thing, and one of the biggest reasons I wrote this is I don't think parents understand the influence they have over their children. I mean, if I go to a car accident at 2 o'clock in the morning, I stick my head in the back of a car, doesn't matter how tough that teenager is, I'll tell you, there's only one person they're asking for, right? It's not their buddies or any kind of celebrity. It's mom or dad they're asking for, right?
Right. The idea, too, sometimes that we have a tendency in this day and age to kind of abdicate from parental duties and let the school systems take care of it in a lot of cases. Do you find that that's happening and that's something that has to be reversed?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I kind of feel sorry for the school teachers. I mean, that's a line of work where somebody comes out of college or university and makes a conscious decision that we're going to educate our youth. Instead of go ahead and make their own mark, they make it their own personal duty to educate our kids and teach them about the academic side of life. I think it's unfortunate when the role of values are put on the teachers. And you know, I see that a lot. You know, you hear people complain about the school systems and, oh, you know, this isn't happening. Well, when you look at those subjects, they're basically values. You know, I really think that's the responsibility of the parent to step in and say, okay, I'm going to teach the life skills. The school can teach the education side of it.
You say you had a great dad. You have a great dad. What do you do as a father that you see yourself replicating what he did when you grew up? And what things, if any, do you do differently than what your dad did?
You know what? The single biggest thing that I do with my kids, and hey, it's not rocket science, man. I mean, I think everybody knows this, but I just take the time. You know, just... everybody's busy in life. It doesn't matter if you're the CEO of a major corporation or you're a single mom and dad just trying to put food on the table. Everybody in life's busy. But it really comes down to that priority thing of, you know what, take half an hour and go play catch with your kid, right? Or go to a fishing hole or a driving range or whatever it is. But my dad always seemed, the world seemed to stop for an hour, 2 hours, and he would sit and talk to me for, you know, however long, right? And I think in the world that we live in, and I certainly don't look down my nose at parents today. I mean, this is... got to be one of the busiest times in history for sure, but sometimes you've got to prioritize that and say, you know what, this is more of a priority than that, if you will, which is, hey, extremely difficult in today's day and age for sure.
We did things as kids that, let's be honest, a lot of kids wouldn't even consider or be allowed to do today. As a parent, especially someone who's an acting fire chief, and you get to unfortunately see the sadder situations in life, as a parent, how lenient are you, or how much of a leash do you give your kids, or will you give your kids, depending upon how old they are, later in life as to the things they can and cannot do to explore for themselves?
Well, you know, hey, that's a great question, and that really is the $57,000 question right there. At what point do you draw that line in the sand? And, you know, getting back to the whole reason I wrote this book is you put into Amazon right now parenting, and you come up with 57,000 different books on parenting. There are so many different opinions on that. And what this book really does is these are, in this book, are the top 10 things that I think are important, me personally. And I think that's what parents really have to do is sit down for however long it takes and really find out where they stand. I think once you do that, then you can start drawing lines in the sand. You know, you realize that, okay, you know what? Kids are going to be kids. They've been like that since the beginning of time. They're always going to try and get into trouble in the teenage years or try different things. That's fine. But, hey, let's give them a heads up of the stuff that's really going to change their lives, right, as far as danger is concerned. I mean, hey, you jump in a car, you've had too much to drink, you wrap it around a pole. There's really two options there, right? It's either things are going to go really bad or you're going to be in a wheelchair. So I think what we need to do is really show our kids what there needs to be scared of, right? And I think that's the biggest thing that we're kind of missing here, because everything now is dangerous. I mean, you turn CNN on, I'm terrified after watching it for 15 minutes.
As a dad, do you have to have a sort of, to use a football analogy, a playbook in place with your mate to determine or to make sure that you're on the same page before things arise?
This is the interesting thing about life, and you know, I keep going back to work too. You know, you can never anticipate every situation. So I think if you sit down with if this situation happens, I'm going to react to this. There's so many different variables involved there that you can't possibly do that. And I think that's why there's always a red flag goes up for me, even before I wrote this book, when I'd hear people say, well, this is how you need to raise your kids, and this is the information. Hey, those people don't know anything about you or your kids or your situation. So as for a plan A, plan B, plan C kind of thing, I think as long as you know where your values stand and you know where you stand as a parent, then you can anticipate those situations. But, I mean, as for trying to draw something up, well, if my kid starts talking about this subject, I'm going to answer it this way. I don't know. I think you'd have to have quite a memory to try and memorize all that stuff. Mm.
The book is called Keeping Me Awake, which is a great idea for Father's Day. It's written by Carl Waggett. Carl, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Oh, are you kidding me? This was great. I really appreciate you taking the time having me on here.
Carl Waggett, author of Keeping Me Awake. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0147, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Several years ago in Italy, a madman attacked Michelangelo's famous Pietà with a hammer. An American named Bob Cassily was the first person to grab him, helping to save this priceless work of art. Years later, Bob Cassily made the headlines again. He created one of the most successful children's museums in America, the City Museum in St. Louis. Even though kids loved his museum, several personal injury lawyers had filed frivolous lawsuits against it. They were hurting the museum. So, to fight back, Bob posted a sign listing all the names of the firms that sued him. Let's be fair, that's pretty risky, but his fans loved it. Recently, I stopped by the museum to meet Bob, but sadly learned he had passed away. His famous sign is gone now, too. So today, I'd like to remember Bob Cassily, a man who was willing to fight for what is right. Learn more about the fight to put common sense back to work in the courts. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on The Stuff File program, we'll talk to Mr. Hollywood, Shannon Rose. Plus, of course, we have an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. And you think your neighbors are bad? In Vero Beach, Florida, 32-year-old Cherie Barnes was arrested after she allegedly threatened to defecate on a neighbor's lawn. Of course, she used much more colorful language, which we'll let your imagination work out. Police arrived at around 3:20 in the morning, where they found Barnes allegedly yelling obscenities at Elman Antonio Diaz, the owner of the house. Diaz told officers that he had noticed a motion sensor light on his property illuminate, alerting him to a potential trespasser. When he exited his house, Diaz reportedly saw Barnes squatting on his property, threatening to do her business. Barnes also allegedly threatened Diaz physically, saying that she would have her cousins come to his house and rape his wife. Nice lady. She was also charged with disorderly conduct and public intoxication. Oh, She was drunk. Well, that explains everything. Well, maybe you'd better think twice before you unfriend someone on Facebook. Police in Tennessee say a couple who unfriended a woman were murdered in their home by the jilted woman's father and another man. Johnson County Sheriff Mike Reese said it's the worst thing he'd seen in 27 years on the job. We have had murders, but nothing like this. This is just senseless. Billy Clay Payne Jr. and Billie Jean Hayworth were killed after they removed Janelle Potter, the daughter of one of the suspects, from their friends list. Both victims had been shot in the head and the man had his throat slit. Their 8-month-old baby was in the mother's arms unharmed. Marvin Enoch Buddy Potter Jr., age 60, and Jamie Lynn Curd, age 38, have now both been arrested and each charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder. Reese said that a couple of harassment cases have been filed in court against Janelle Potter recently due to someone blocking her on Facebook or taking her off. He added, "Once you've crossed her father too." Curd's attorney said, "It's safe to say there's more to it than the Facebook problem, it appears." Wow. Wonder how long it will be before people who use Foursquare will start killing people who take their mayorship away. Strange days indeed. Anyway, I think it's fair to say that Texas is a state that I'll never understand. A new gun range will be opening this summer in Lewisville, Texas, and will have 2 rooms available for hosting children's birthday parties. I kid you not. Owner David Prince says the party rooms at Eagle Gun Range will be available for children as young as 8 years old, noting, "You have to be tall enough to get above the shooting table." If it makes you feel any better, Prince did say they're not going to be left unattended. Parents are going to be one-on-one, or if there's not enough parents, we'll have range safety officials and officers here to show them how to do it safely. The soon-to-open Texas gun range has reportedly been well-received by locals, though some nearby residents say they are opposed to letting such young children handle live firearms. Yeah, life's definitely just different there in Texas. And apparently being bullied at the playground by other children is a pain that some people just can never get past. In Scranton, Pennsylvania, 33-year-old Joe Mongrian has been arrested on charges that he assaulted a 9-year-old boy after losing to him in a water balloon fight. Investigators say it was Joe who actually started the water fight with the child, but became angry when the boy hit him with a water balloon. Isn't that the idea of a water balloon fight? Anyway, witnesses told police that Joe chased the child down, pushed him to the ground, and began kicking him. He also allegedly assaulted the child's mother after she tried to intervene. Joe is now charged with 2 counts of simple assault and harassment. Dude, why are you starting a fight with a 9-year-old? Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Shannon Rose was born with a life-threatening genetic disorder, and his life has been an uphill battle. Yet he has accomplished so much in life, from being a professional wrestling announcer and national spokesperson to the president of a national public relations firm. And full disclosure, that firm has been responsible for booking many guests on this show. Shannon is probably best known for his announcing role in the EA Sports MMA video game. He's also written a book that chronicles his journey and what he's endured. And Shannon is on the line with us right now via Skype-to-Skype communications to talk to us from Florida. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So first of all,
tell
us about this genetic disorder. It's EDS, right? What is it?
Yeah, it's called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, the national spokesperson for it. And what it is, it's a group of connective tissue disorders. And you think of collagen. Collagen is the glue that makes up our body. Well, that glue doesn't work right. So these people, 1 in 15,000 people across the nation, across the world have it, and that collagen doesn't work for them. So for instance, I'll give you a few examples. When I was a younger child, I lost my voice for a year because it affects everything from your blood to being autoimmune to everything from your lungs, everything else. And when I lost my voice, I didn't let it stop me, though. I went ahead and was still in the choir and did lip sync to songs before lip sync was cool. Also, I lost my use of my arms. Actually, I'm talking to you now. I can move my arms, not 100%, but I don't have no feeling in them. But off and on for the past year, since I was 12, I'm 37 now, I've had my arms come and go with weaknesses and being paralyzed. I've had bowel obstructions. Everything in my body's been affected in some way. And as I get older, I compare myself to the X-Men or like Superman, where, you know, I have these powers and I'm learning to use them for the mental state of people that have disabilities to show them that I can become a success. But it's almost like, yeah, mutant powers that, you know, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But I use, again, these certain things that happen to me to my advantage to educate people, to show them that, you know, my Facebook or I have people follow me. I have over 10,000 people follow me on social media, and they follow it when I'm in the hospital. They, you know, when I'm about to go to surgery, I like to hear the tones of the phone to be able to see that people do care, and they leave prayer messages. And that's the thing. It's almost like my life is a reality show.
Have you always been someone with a positive outlook on life, even with all the things that you've had to deal with? Or is that something that was instilled in you by your parents who got you to have this positive outlook?
Well, my parents have been my friends, you know, even in the past when I was a kid and to my current state, they've always been there for me. And I think it's also, I think it comes inside of someone. It's the passion that comes from their inner body that if you see they, you know, you're not going to let anybody stop you. You know, I had doctors tell me it's in my head or, you know, try to shove their fist in my face and say, well, I'm going to try to scare this out of you, or that your moose cough is all in your head. What they called, I had this cough that they thought at one point was Tourette's, which it wasn't. It was because, again, my vocal cords were being affected by my Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And I don't say EDS because EDS can be termed as erectile dysfunction, and we don't want to go there. You know, I don't have that problem. But it definitely, when I go to hospitals, they hear EDS and they think something bad. But when it actually is something good, because I educate the doctors every time I do go in and speak to them.
Well, how about your own education in this situation? Because you've gone through, as you mentioned, so much, and I'm sure there was a point you were saying, and your parents were probably saying, "What is wrong with me?" To finally have a name that you can put to it and an explanation as to what it is and why it's happening, was that almost kind of a relief?
Well, you know, there is really, I'm always a question mark. I was just in the hospital about a month ago, and they thought that, you know, I had pneumonia, but then the doctors said, well, you know, they didn't answer. They don't answer. Doctors are scared. They're scared because I'm a question mark. And when I would ask them a question, it'd almost be like a politician. I work with politicians. I'm friends with them. And, you know, they don't want to answer. They divert the question. And they always go – and that's a smart person times because they're trying to get around what they're saying. But at the same time, I'm very honest and forthcoming in everything I do. And just to answer your question, though, there's no answers. I can't really say that there is a conclusion to what I have because there's not. You know, I still go to places and they're not able to answer and my parents are, you know, they deal with it, but at the same time it's still very hard for myself to deal with. But I don't show it like that. You know, because if you let people see you sweat in any form of medium or any form of thing you do in life, then they'll take advantage of that. Because people will do that.
So how scary, if at all, is it to have something that can manifest itself in different ways? Are you always worried about what might be next, especially as you age?
Well, I can't worry about tomorrow. I worry about today. And I don't really even worry. You know, it's past the point where I worry about what's going on with my medical prowess. You know, I just deal with the situation. That's the only thing they can deal is when there's an acute form of things happening is when they can deal with it. I guess when it happens, like when they went in and with a bronchoscopy and I had to be put in twilight, I've never had that happen. And with patients with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, any kind of invasive type procedures like that, or they have to put an NG tube through my nose, not to get too descriptive, hopefully they're not eating any food here while they're listening, but they have to do that when I have a bowel obstruction. And an NG tube, in a sense, is them shoving a tube down your nose. And it's not, it doesn't feel too pretty. And yeah, it does worry me. But, you know, it's one of those things where my passion is again, educating people, letting them know, letting the doctors know, and also behind my work. I love what I do, and I have the passion that I put forth in my job also.
And as you say, it hasn't stopped you from doing anything. So let's talk a little bit about your job. You became a professional wrestling announcer. Was it the announcing or the wrestling that drew you to this, that made you say, this is what I want to do?
Well, I think it was both. I started actually as a fan when I was like 10 years old, and the characters, the over the top storylines brought me in, and the over-top characters brought me into enjoying seeing Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant. And at 12 years old, I was so sick, the Make-A-Wish Foundation granted me a wish to meet Hulk Hogan and the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, Gordon Solie also, the Dina broadcasters, who gave me my first shot at working in wrestling after meeting him through the Make-A-Wish Foundation. In fact, I still have the $5 bill that he gave me hanging up in my office.
You know, we often see situations with Make-A-Wish Foundation and other organizations like it, but we never get a chance to hear what it really does for the person who receives the wish. So what was that like for you? How did it change life for you after, and what kind of an experience was that, an uplifting experience?
Well, you know, if it wasn't for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and they do grant great wishes, and them and the Children's Dream Fund, another newer group, I wouldn't be where I'm at. And not that I took advantage of the situation, but I went ahead and took a situation and made something of it, I should say, a little bit twist of words there, because I went ahead and I met wrestlers. I got my foot in the door. They saw the passion inside me. They saw not only was I handicapped, even I went to an outlaw group, an independent wrestling group back when I was 14, and the wrestling announcer didn't show up. I was timekeeping, and they let the handicapped kid, they felt sorry for him, let me timekeep. And then he didn't show up, so they said, would you like to ring announce? And I said, ring announce? I'm only 14 years old. I don't know how to do this. And plus, my arms were in a sling. They went ahead and put the microphone in the middle of my arms. In the middle of my hands, I should say, and the rest is history. So I don't let anything defeat me, anything stop me, and even if it's, something I'm not aware of or something I don't know how to do, I just learn how to do it and make it better.
You're also, as I mentioned, you have the role of the announcer in the EA Sports MMA video. That must be like a dream come true.
Oh, was. You know, it's one of those things. If you Google my name on YouTube, you see the video that we produced for EA where I step foot inside the video store, the Best Buy, and I look all the screens, and all the screens have me on it. And you hear the song about a dream, and the dream succeeded. Yeah, I'm forever going to be known as someone in a video game. Even when I pass on, I'm going to be in a video game. And I auditioned for the part, and I think it's God who gave me the whether you believe in God or not, you have to understand that there's a higher power, and he gave me the chance, and that was the one chapter, the book closed in that one. Now I'm reopening another one with a book and also a movie myself. But I tell you, being able to be in a studio that sat, Tiger Woods sat there, John Madden sat there, and I was over there 10 hours, over 1,000 names, and I had to do a Michael Buffer type over-the-top voice. At the end of the day, because of the fact I'm not built like you or someone else, I was on the ground with using every muscle I could, my announcing muscles, literally had the microphone down by my throat, and just being able to push out what I could left after having to do 500 pages of script.
Wow. But the proof is in the pudding, and in the final product, I'm sure it's something you must be very, very proud of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first time I saw it, well, we produced the video thing, but the first time I actually saw it was I was walking through Best Buy, and someone tapped me on the shoulder, and I was like, what am I doing? And I look around, and they pointed to the screen, and they recognized me, being on the screen, and I was on this huge TV at Best Buy. That's when you know you've made it, when you're on the screen of Best Buy and you have a gigantic TV screen.
Who do you see as your primary reader for the book that you've written? Who do you want to reach to the most?
Well, actually, the book's going to be coming out shortly. We're just finalizing everything with the ghostwriter, and it's almost all done as far as I wrote the transcript. Now we're going to pass it on to be edited and whatnot. I think the reader is going to be someone – the book's going to be around not so much about Hollywood, which I work in. I'm known as Mr. Hollywood, coined by various radio personalities. But it's not even about wrestling. It's about the fact that a kid can overcome so many challenges, so many adversities, and still continue on and still be a success, and not only – have different chapters of his life, but also open the door for others that have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Well, Shannon, congratulations on all the things you've done. And I thank you, too, because as I mentioned earlier in the introduction, your national public relations firm has been instrumental in helping me get some of the guests we have on the show. So I thank you for that, and continued success in all you do.
Well, thank you so very much. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And they can check me out on my website. It's the letter M, ShannonRose.com.
I am ShannonRose.com. Thank you very much, Shannon.
Thank you.
Shannon Rose, also known as Mr. Hollywood. You can visit his website at imshannonrose.com. That's imshannonrose.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0147, and you'll find links to Shannon's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Kenny Boom Smith was apparently proud of his skills as a counterfeiter. He allegedly approached a pawn shop owner offering to sell counterfeit money and the machine he used to make it. The pawn shop? American Jewelry and Loan in Detroit, Michigan, site of the reality show on True TV. Smith allegedly offered to sell the items to shop owner and series star Les Gold so that he could be on the show. A short time later, the Secret Service, who had been tracking Smith, stopped in. Gold told them what had happened and even provided video of the conversation. Smith was arrested on federal counterfeiting charges. He even had to sign a waiver so that he could be on the show. All because he wanted his 5 minutes of fame on TV, Gold said. Now why would someone waltz into a pawn shop that's part of a reality show and try to sell them a counterfeit making machine and counterfeit money? Well, in this case, there are actually two reasons. One, utter vanity, and two, they're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0147. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0147. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And you'll also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. Don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.